Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are answering your listener questions.
That's right, Joel. We are joined here with five of our listeners who are sitting with us and enjoying a beer.
Oh, that'd be excellent. I'm totally up for that.
How cool would that be if they were actually with us in person and we're all kind of like drinking beer, talking about money? I mean, that's kind of how this podcast originated, was us sitting around talking about personal finances while enjoying a craft beer. So I actually personally think that that would be a lot of fun.
No, that'd be great. We've had a couple of meetups before with podcast listeners, and I would love to do more and more of that. And hopefully in the future, we'll be able to announce more dates where we can actually make that a reality, because the more we get around the country and get to meet listeners and have a beer with them.
But we don't get around the country, though.
But we need to. That's what I'm saying. We need to do that more.
We live in Atlanta. There is so much of my life that's right here, just in Atlanta. But I agree, it would be nice to be able to get out there. And hopefully it will happen more. I just feel like it's just a tease that we're putting that out there. And I'm like, well, when is that actually going to happen?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Nothing set in stone right now, but hopefully in the not too distant future.
That'd be amazing. Hit up all of our favorite breweries, have folks meet us there. And we just kind of hang out. Sounds like the life.
I foresee it.
Sign me up.
Let me check my magic eight ball and see if it's going to happen soon.
The signs say yes. No, we do have some listener questions. We've got a question about cash management accounts. We haven't covered that yet. I'm excited to talk about that. We're going to talk about how to get out of a crappy job as well, kind of some of the financial ramifications. One of our listeners is in a tough spot, and she wants to know what we think there. And we also have a tip from a listener who is house hacking that has a pretty brilliant approach. And so she's going to share that with us. We'll talk about that at the end of the episode.
Yeah. All right, Matt. I'm looking forward to it. Lots of good questions as usual. And Matt, before we dig into those listener questions, I know you recently appealed your property taxes and you had to go in actually follow that through. What was that like?
Yeah, well, I've appealed before, but I've never actually gone in person and presented in front of the little board. Like, there's a board of three people. That's how they do it in Atlanta, at least. And if you feel that the city or your local government has overvalued your property, you can present a case, essentially. And so I had comps. I even had pictures of my property and basically kind of highlighting the things that were wrong with it to kind of sway them a little bit. And I'll be honest, I was a little bummed because I wasn't able to get it down to the dollar amount that I felt accurately represented the property, but they were willing to kind of meet me in the middle a little bit. But honestly, man, it was almost kind of fun because I felt like this was part of growing up a little bit. Like, I'd never kind of been in court where I had to present a case. And so going before them, it kind of freaked me out a little bit. I was a little bit nervous, but it was super chill. We're just kind of sitting there in an office and I presented my information, but they also had, there's a guy from the county, the appraiser, and he presented his information. And I presented more of my information, and then they deliberated and made a decision.
And then you beat them up, and then you won?
And then I cried because I didn't get my way, and then they felt bad, so they knocked a few more dollars off.
That's beautiful, man. That's like democracy at work right there, right?
It was a clear example of the government working well, because it was an efficient use of not only their time, but my time as well. It took me less than 1 hour, easily, from the time I left my house to, you know, the time I came home. And so me spending less than 1 hour, that's going to save me at least $700 over the next 3 years. And again, while it wasn't quite as much as I was hoping, I mean, $700 at least.
That's a good chunk of change for 1 hour.
Yeah, for less than 1 hour of my time.
Yeah.
And not only that, I got to learn about the process a little bit. And so next time one of, you know, my rental properties comes up or my own house, I'm going to be able to show up and present a better case because I'm familiar with just how it works.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think anybody out there who feels like their property taxes are overinflated by their local government, I mean, appealing is the way to go. And then following it through, making sure that you go in front of whatever you have locally, whether it's a board of equalization, which is what we have here. And the great thing too, Matt, is that at least where we live, when you win the case, when you're able to bring that down that value below what the county or city is arguing your home is worth, they lock in that rate for 3 years. And that's like a really nice benefit too.
Yeah, the current year and then 2 additional years. And by the way, they've updated it. And so it's not even if you get the amount reduced, even if it stays the same, they throw you a bone and they say, okay, you know what? For the next 2 years, we're not going to increase it. It gets locked in at the current rate.
Just for showing up.
Just for showing up.
Dude, yeah. That's great.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
That's cool. Okay. Yeah. Well, just, yeah, you know, word to the wise for anybody out there who it does own a home and they feel like their property taxes are too high. That's definitely an avenue worth pursuing. All right, Matt, let's get on to the beer that we're having on the show today. We're drinking Hazelnut Mocha Latte by True Respite Brewing. And it's funny. Yeah, latte. This is a latte-esque beer, I guess, right?
Yeah, man, absolutely. Well, the label, it looks just like a to-go cup of coffee. It's got the corrugated cardboard kind of wrap around it. Certainly makes you think about coffee. This one was donated to the show by our friends Waffles on Wednesday. They live out in California, and they have a blog by the same name where they document their financial independence journey. And they were gracious enough to donate our beers this week to the show.
Yeah, and their blog, by the way, very much worth reading. I've learned a lot from our friends, the Waffles. And yeah, they go by Waffles on Wednesday because that's their pipe dream, is to be able to retire early. Then they can have waffles whenever they want, including on Wednesdays. They don't have to get into work. No need to speed on into the office. Man, they can just have a chill morning drinking their OJ and eating a waffle. That sounds nice, doesn't it?
Maybe even drinking a hazelnut mocha latte.
Yeah. And you know what? I love those people, but I guarantee you they're the kind of folks that would drink before noon. So they would totally drink this for breakfast.
I'm not going to completely throw them under the bus, but maybe.
Right. Yeah. But nobody knows who they are because they're anonymous. Exactly. So yeah,
well, we love them. Thank you guys so much. And we will get to our tasting notes on this beer at the end of the episode.
All right, Matt. But now let's get to our listener questions. For anyone out there who has a question that they'd love for us to tackle on an upcoming episode, well, you can go to howtomoney.com/ask. It'll take you just a couple of minutes to submit your voice question, and hopefully we can tackle it on an upcoming episode. Let's get to our first one about cash management accounts.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Tyler from Cleveland, Ohio. First, I wanted to say thank you for the podcast. My wife and I are on our journey to financial independence, and your podcast has helped to keep us motivated. Now on to my question. I've been receiving a lot of advertisements lately about cash management accounts from organizations like SoFi and Fidelity. I'm curious if you could explain a little about them. For example, how they work and how someone might use them. Any insights are appreciated. Thank you.
Nice, Tyler. We are pumped for you guys. And by the way, you know, we just talked about Waffles on Wednesday. Look them up, because that's the whole reason they started their blog, was to kind of document their journey towards financial independence. But let's go ahead and get to your question. You're asking about cash management accounts, or CMAs. Those are accounts where you put money, essentially, that you don't want to be invested. It's kind of like a combo between a checking and savings account that is typically offered not by a bank, but by an online broker like Fidelity or SoFi, like you mentioned. There are more benefits that are being offered by these companies, where it might even be possible for you to drop your online checking and savings account.
Yeah, you can ditch doing business with a traditional bank altogether and just go with a CMA if you really wanted to. And the biggest benefit, Tyler, of going with a CMA versus doing business with a traditional bank is that it can help streamline and simplify your finances. So for example, if you already have an account with Fidelity, like let's say you've got a Roth IRA with Fidelity, well, it would be super easy to open up a CMA with them as well. And that means having to log into fewer accounts, faster transfers when it's time to invest, and then fewer tax documents when it comes to tax time. There are other benefits to a CMA as well. For instance, oftentimes you can get a higher rate of interest on your money. So depending on what company you open one up with, you're pretty much guaranteed to receive a higher rate compared to what traditional banks are offering. But it also can be a double-edged sword, right? With CMAs, you also might find less competitive interest rates compared to the high interest rate savings accounts. So rates can be higher, and they're almost always higher compared to just a brick and mortar bank, the big mega banks, who prefer to pay you 0.01% on your money. And sometimes those CMAs can be hyper competitive with an online bank savings account, but many times they fall a bit short. So definitely make sure you're kind of paying attention to what market rates are before you make your decision for where you put the majority of your savings.
Yeah. So for example, we just mentioned Fidelity. We love them. They're a great company, but in their CMA, they're only offering 0.82%. which is maybe a point lower than some of the better online high interest savings accounts out there.
Sure.
And there are other benefits associated with these CMAs as well. And so let's think through, like, if you were going to consider dropping your savings in your checking account in favor of a CMA, you'll likely want the ability to occasionally withdraw some cash from an ATM, right? And you'll also want to make sure that you're able to do that fee free. Fidelity, SoFi, and Schwab, they all do a great job here, and they will reimburse all of your ATM fees. Some other features to look for are CMA accounts with no monthly fees, because you know how much we hate those unnecessary fees. Also, if you're looking to entirely replace your checking account, you might want to also make sure that you have the option for mobile check deposits as well as free checks. I don't write checks often, Joel. We talked about sort of the downsides of writing checks, but sometimes there's certain organizations and you know what they ask for. They ask for checks.
Right.
I'm looking at you, preschool.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say our kids' schools are one of those things.
Preschool, pre-K, and then anything for like related to the class. Like they always want it to be on a paper check. And I'm saying, come on, is there not a way that we can set up some sort of digital account per class? I guess now that I say it out loud, that sounds kind of complicated. if you have a specific Cash App account. Or
you're always asking your kids' teachers, won't you accept payment from the chip in my finger? Come on.
No, man, that freaks me out. I'm going to be like the last person to implant any sort of technology in my body.
Dude, it's happening. That
Google Glass, you're going to get glasses that is connected to the internet before you even need glasses just because you can be a nerd.
That, I mean, it's crazy. It's happening and people are literally getting chips implanted in their bodies for all sorts of purposes. It definitely freaks me out. But I'll tell you what doesn't freak me out, Matt. CMAs, right? They're awesome in so many ways. But there are a couple other considerations that need to be made before you make a decision. And one of those, you got to think about how your money's insured. And it is typically under a cash management account insured by the FDIC. Almost all of these online investment companies that are getting into this sphere are offering FDIC insurance for your money. So the typical amount offered here is $250,000, which is plenty for almost anybody listening to this podcast, right? But it's just one of those important things to consider, especially as these CMAs get offered by more and more fintech companies, kind of these newer startups. Make sure you look for the logo. Make sure you check the FDIC's website to ensure that your money is actually insured, especially with these companies that are new and you're not really completely familiar with what they offer yet.
Yeah, Joel, perhaps it's worth asking yourself the question, like, what do you need out of a cash management account? If there's one that allows you to do pretty much everything that you need to do for online banking, then it's worth considering if it allows you to simplify your life. But, you know, we'd caution you against hopping over to a different company just because the rate might be a little bit higher than what your current traditional bank is offering. Oftentimes, these online savings accounts and these different fintech companies, they'll have a higher, maybe inflated interest rate that they're paying out. And then slowly over time, you might see that decline. But look at the other aspects of that company. Look at the different cash management accounts that are out there and the features that are offered. And if it works for you, then it might very well be a great place for you to put your money.
Yeah, man, we've talked extensively about different online banks and how online banks, in our opinion, are one of the best places to put your cash. But you know what? A discount brokerage company or a fintech company, well, they're making big time headway when it comes to savings accounts or cash management accounts. You know, they're changing the game with these products they're offering and all the ancillary benefits that someone can receive from opening one up. And so, yeah, if it fits your lifestyle, if it offers you benefits that are going to save you money and increase flexibility.
Save you time.
Yeah, I say go for it. A cash management account with one of these companies can be a great way to go. All right, Matt, we've got more questions to get to, including the next one about how to leave a job that's terrible. And we'll get to that right after the break.
All right, Joel, let's hear that next question. This one has a little bit to do with something called peace out money.
Hi, this is Jessica from South Carolina. I have enough money saved up right now for about 3 months if I didn't have any income. And I'm in a job that I would really love to get out of. And so that could be my peace money, except I have a contract that would cost $9,500 for me to end early. But I'm in a job that is making me absolutely miserable and anxious, and I just can't stand going to work every day. And it's about $6,000 in savings, but about $9,500 to get out of the contract. Plus, you know, having to live. What should I do?
Jessica, thanks so much for your question. And I'm so sad to hear that you're in a tough predicament like this. Being in a crappy work environment and not seeing any sort of way out, that's really, really tough. So I guess my first thought, the first thing I turn to is I want to ask you if there are any ways that you can potentially mitigate the anxiety that you're currently experiencing while staying in your current job. Could you shift roles within your current company? I mean, maybe you could transfer to another department, or you could work on a different team reporting to a different manager. Depending on kind of what is happening inside of your work that's making you anxious, that's making it super difficult because of that high fee, essentially, to ditch your contract and get out of employment there, I would ask you to pursue any avenues that you could within the current company before quitting entirely, because that could put you at major financial risk.
Yeah, well, speaking of financial risk, Joel, let's talk about the money side of this as well. Jessica, you're asking this question of a couple of guys who think about money a lot, right?
Yeah, we do.
And we would hate to see you in debt and without a job at the same time, right? Like, if you had the full $9,500 set aside plus some savings for some basic living expenses, right? It would be a completely different question. Then it wouldn't be a question necessarily about debt, but it would be about how much your sanity is worth. $9,500, it's still a lot of money. That's a really steep fee. But at that point, it's completely up to you to know how much you can actually endure. It's up to you to know what you're willing to do and what you're no longer willing to put up with.
Yeah, I mean, I think using the money that you have to buy yourself sanity, it makes a whole lot of sense. If you're in a job that you don't like, I think, Matt, we would say, for the most part, find a way to change your situation. And sometimes, right, that peace out money that Jessica referenced, that offers you that perfect opportunity to kind of leave a situation like that. That's why we're such big fans of kind of having more than just an emergency fund, but amassing enough to give you those months where you wouldn't have to have a paycheck and you could still afford to live while you're searching for something else if things were to get too difficult to stay with your current employer.
Yeah, Joel, and that's episode 135, by the way, where we revisited peace out money and how valuable that can be for folks. And so, Jessica, if I were in your position, I would probably be getting my resume together and, you know, start looking to apply for some other jobs. It might be worth it to quit if you had someplace to land and you were able to make at least a lateral job move, right? But be careful of how you discuss your current employer when you are applying for these additional jobs. You know, sounding disgruntled, even if you have a good reason to be upset, like, this never reflects well in a job interview. So emphasize maybe the positive reasons that you're looking for new work, maybe a new challenge, an invigorating company culture, like that sort of thing, just where you're not necessarily bashing on that current company.
Yeah, man, I think that's so important, because that company that you're looking to get hired at, the person interviewing you doesn't know about the toxic work environment. They don't know about the bad manager you have. And if you speak ill, it reflects more poorly on you than it does on them. So be careful about how you talk about your former employer. I completely agree, Matt. I think that's great advice. Also, too, I think there's something really important about avoiding a gap in employment. If you quit your job and you're unemployed for a little while, not only is that hard on your finances, but it's also hard on your resume. You kind of got that gap there. And people wonder, well, why'd she leave there in such a hurry? What was going on? So I think you look better to potential employers. If you kind of maintain your work history, you're a more appealing job candidate by actually being employed right now while you're searching. So not only is it helpful financially, it's also helpful in that application process. So I know it's tough, Jessica. We're rooting for you, because it sounds like you're in a really, really hard spot, kind of between a rock and a hard place. But paying $9,500 to get out of a job when you've only got $6,000 in the bank, I just don't think it's something that we can sign off on and say that that's a good idea, even though it's an incredibly hard position to be in. That was a hard one, Matt, because, yeah, there's so much specific personal consideration and we don't actually know everything that's going on inside of the employer. I would also recommend to Jessica to keep herself safe no matter what.
Exactly. Yeah. I was about to say that as well. Like, if it's like, she didn't actually say the words toxic in her question, but if it is sort of a toxic, abusive or harmful sort of position that where she's in, then certainly in that situation, go to HR. If there's something illegal going on, then that's something you can straight up report to the police, report to the authorities. So certainly we don't want to downplay if anything like that is going on.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Matt, let's get to the next question. And this one is about saving money for their kid.
Hey guys, my name's Dan from Tempe, Arizona, and I'm interested to learn more about investment vehicles for children. I do have a 529 plan for my 9-month-old that I'm contributing about $350 a month to, but I want to look at some alternate vehicles, and I've looked at potentially setting up a Roth IRA, but I understand that he needs earned income, which is not impossible, but it is also a bit convoluted from what I can tell. And I've looked at custodial accounts, whether it's a brokerage or a savings, and I know there are some pros and cons to that, especially related to federal aid if he does choose to go to school and is looking at federal aid. And then there's also the fact that once he turns 18, he will have full control of those accounts. And if he wanted to take the money out and blow it on a weekend to Las Vegas or something, he could do that. So I'm also entertaining just starting my own account for him, just to kind of keep as a long-term kind of thing, and maybe tuck away some money in there. Just curious what you guys think about that. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, Dan, thanks so much for your question, and way to start saving for your son this early in life. That is fantastic.
Yeah, the best time to start is when they're in utero, but you know, 9 months old, that's pretty good too.
Get on it, Dan. Why'd you wait so long? Well, Dan, first of all, you know, you mentioned kid Roth IRAs, and some folks will try to do this and figure out a way to get their young children earned income in order to help them to be able to contribute to a Roth. If you own your own business, it's easier to do this. If you did go this route, like Fidelity and Schwab, they both offer some great custodial Roth accounts. And even jobs like babysitting or mowing lawns can count towards that earned income. But, you know, you mentioned your son, and he's only 9 months old, so he probably can't do this, right? A baby babysitting himself kind of sounds like Baby Yoda, you know, he's like holding down the fort.
The IRS is totally going to crack down on that.
But on that note, man, I actually did have a friend who did this when she was, I believe, a preteen. Her father was a CPA, and he knew all the tax laws, of course, and he employed her in his office, and she actually worked, and she was able to get her Roth IRA started very early. And we are all familiar with the, you know, amazing sort of eighth wonder of the world compounding effects when you're able to let your money sit for the long term.
Yeah, even just a little bit of money started at a super young age just has just a massive impact in the long
run. Let it go year after year.
Yeah, for sure. But let's talk about the cons to a custodial account as well, Matt. There are lots of downsides when you open up an account in your son's name, Dan. Like you said, once he's of age, he can do whatever he wants with that money. So for a lot of parents, this could be a source of unnecessary stress. It's also best not to load up a savings account in their name for financial aid purposes, right? Because that counts against them when they're looking for scholarships and aid from their potential college. Any account in their name, including a 529, will have a much larger impact on the financial aid that is offered to them. So you definitely want to be careful when you're putting money in their name. That could mean less free money, fewer aid resources from the future college of your son's choice.
Yeah, if those funds are there in his name, there's more of that expected family contribution that goes towards his college. And so, Dan, if you don't already have a personal Roth, then we would definitely recommend you open one of those up. We recommend maxing out your own retirement accounts before saving for your child's college anyway. That Roth can function as a way to save for their future without it having an impact on financial aid for college. And it also gives you control on how and when you want to give that money to him. So for example, if you maxed out just your Roth IRA every year for the next 17 years, you would have over $100,000 in contributions alone. And that's a lot of money that you can flexibly withdraw when you're ready to give your kid a financial gift. And then on top of that, if you have a spouse where you can also max out that Roth IRA as well, well, obviously you're looking at doubling that money.
Yeah, then not only are you banking and saving for your own financial future, your own retirement, what you're doing is you flexibly have access to this money when you do choose to use it early for a child's education, let's say. And at the same time, they don't have access to that money because it's in your name. And so that's super helpful. There's a lot of peace of mind there.
Yeah, essentially what we're saying by doing this is that, Dan, you're setting yourself up to be in a strong position financially in the future. By minimizing your debt now and increasing the amount that you are investing, like that gives you more options down the road to contribute to your son's college if there is a need for funds over and above that 529 plan that you're already planning to set aside.
Yeah, and if there are no need for those funds for college, Matt, I mean, Dan can wait and help his son out with a down payment for his first house, or there are all sorts of flexible ways to use that money, especially if invested in a Roth. And that's why it's kind of this perfect vehicle. It's like this perfect happy medium to be able to save for yourself, but then also to be able to look out for your kids as they get older too.
I love it, man.
All right, Matt, we got a couple more questions to answer, including one listener who had some great ideas, some great thoughts on house hacking, and we'll get to those right after the break. All right, Matt, we're back from the break, and our first questions come from listener Ryan, and I do mean questions because he had a few.
Hey, Matt and Joel, this is Ryan from Corpus Christi, Texas. Loving the podcast, so I got a couple questions for you guys. So feel free to edit me if you don't want to answer them all. My first one is pretty simple. When you say multiply the amount you invest by 173 and you'll have the amount that you'll have in 10 years, what is that based on? The S&P? an 8 or a 10% interest rate? Secondly, I'd love your opinion on a duplex as a first-time real estate investment property. I'm looking to invest in the next year or so, and I know you guys have most of your portfolio in single-family homes. But why is that, since you can have two or even three renters per plot of land with a duplex or a triplex? And lastly, I'm 21 and looking to invest in my retirement. However, my work does not offer me a 401k. So I was looking at Vanguard or maybe M1, but I've only heard of these companies through your podcast. So I'm worried about giving them so much of my retirement money and so much of my future. What are the chances I could lose all of my money? I know that they're federally insured somehow, but I'm not sure how that works. Thanks so much, guys. I love how you're drinking beer on the podcast. I've only been drinking for less than a year at this point, so I don't nearly understand your tasting notes. And I only shop at my local grocery store, so you guys will probably cringe at that. But I love hearing what you're drinking and seeing if I can find it. Thanks so much, guys. Bye.
Ryan, you know, there can actually be some really good beer at the grocery store. It depends on where you go. So don't immediately discount your discount grocery store.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I will say Aldi, not a great beer selection, okay? They're great in so many other ways, but don't get your beer at Aldi.
I have yet to find a decent beer at Aldi, I will admit.
But a lot of the bigger grocery stores, yeah, they've massively expanded what they're offering when it comes to decent craft beer. And yeah, I would not be ashamed to get my beer from a grocery store.
For sure. And Ryan, you talked about editing your questions. We are not going to cut those down, but since you did ask three questions, we'll try to answer those pretty quickly. First of all, you asked about the rule of 173. That is just some back of a napkin math. This is just some quick calculator app crunching, right? The blogger, Mr. Money Mustache, I think he was the first person that I heard the rule of 173 from, but it's a rough calculation of what a monthly amount invested at 7% would equal over a 10-year period. It's essentially just an easy way to calculate opportunity cost. So, for instance, $15 a week, that doesn't sound like much money for coffee, right? But if you take that money and you invest it instead in the market, were it to earn 7%, you're looking at over $10,000 if you were to have invested that money instead of drink it.
Yeah. And it's such a good, quick, easy way to think about it, right? All right. And let's tackle single family home versus multifamily. That's a great question, Ryan. So for me, I think the reason I gravitated towards single family homes was because I attempted to live in the home and then rented it out when I bought another. That was just kind of my initial approach. And that can, of course, be done with a multifamily as well. But when I began real estate investing, multiple units just weren't on my radar. Like, I just didn't know enough about them. And so I kind of just started with the single family home route. And let's oversimplify this just a little bit, but buying multifamily properties, well, that's typically better for cash flow, right? You're going to potentially make more money on your money every single month. And single family homes typically experience greater appreciation over time. That's just what they're better at. So there are pros and cons to both. For another example, single family homes are easier to sell because there's a bigger pool of potential buyers. And you also have access to a larger pool of renters too. But multifamily homes, well, they allow you to house hack right away and save a ton of money at the same time. So we suggest kind of picking a specific strategy and becoming an expert in it. And the strategy I picked, because it's just kind of where I naturally landed in the beginning, was single family homes. But I've gotten more and more into multifamily over time, renting out the back part of our home and then buying a duplex. And I plan on doing more in the multifamily space, but just know that there's not a slam dunk for one or the other. Either can be a great choice. Just kind of depends on what works for you.
Yeah, and it also depends too what's available in your market, sure, in your area, right? Like, a lot of times there just aren't nearly as many multifamily units. There aren't as many duplexes as there are single family. That, coupled with the fact that it takes a little bit more money, because a lot of times a duplex will be a little bit more expensive. And so you have to scrape together a little bit more money than you would for maybe a single family.
Sure, yeah. And the lender is going to require that you put more money down when you're buying a multifamily property as well.
Exactly. And then, Ryan, your last dilemma had to do with you not having a 401k through your work. Boo, that's no good. And you know what? Maybe that's even worth writing to HR about and seeing if that's something that they can change.
Oh, most definitely.
Well, but for now, you're probably going to be on your own. And in that case, Vanguard, they've been around for decades. We mentioned them a good bit. We've mentioned M1 before as well. They are a little more recent. They're one of these newer fintech companies, but neither one of these are fly-by-night operations. Joel and I, we both personally have money invested, you know, via both of these brokerages. But for you, what you specifically want to look for is SIPC insurance. That's the main thing that you need to vet before choosing an investment company, before going with a specific brokerage. This ensures that if an investment firm, if they go insolvent, if they go belly up, that you're insured on your money. Both of these companies, as well as our other favorites, they all have SIPC insurance, which is, by the way, this is similar to FDIC coverage for banks, but this is the coverage that's offered by brokerages.
Yeah, and we talked about FDIC insurance earlier on in the episode. So yeah, SIPC, very similar for brokerage accounts.
We are covering all the acronyms.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I think, Brian, that these are great questions. It sounds like you're well on your way thinking through the right things, and hopefully this helps you make a good decision. But yeah, whether you go with Vanguard or M1, I mean, literally, we mentioned many low-cost brokerage companies, and you can't go wrong with any of them. I mean, they're really good companies, and like Matt said, if they've got the insurance, you're good to go. Just make sure you go with the one that works best for you. And I think one thing, Matt, that a lot of people have brought up is Vanguard, fantastic company, terrible interface. So if you don't like Vanguard's interface, if you don't like their terrible web presence, which a lot of people in their 20s and 30s in particular are like, this is junk. This is terrible.
Feels a little archaic sometimes.
That's why a lot of people are going with a company like M1, because it feels more current. It feels more modern. It feels like you can actually use it. And so that's part of the reason we like it. We like the interface on M1. They're both great companies. But if you're into interface, if you're into using your app to do investments, then it would make sense, I think, to go with a company like M1, even though they're both excellent.
Yeah, we love them both. We're not going to pick favorites. All right, Joel, it is time for our last, not question, we actually have a comment here from Noel.
Hi, I wanted to share an idea for house hacking. And I've been doing this for several years and it's worked out great. So I have extra bedrooms in my house, and instead of getting a roommate or using Airbnb, I have been renting the rooms temporarily to medical students. Every hospital in the country has medical students stay for either a month or up to a couple of months and do rotations. So this is all fourth year medical students. The fourth year medical school is spent traveling around the country doing short rotations at different hospitals, and they all need a place to stay. So my local hospital hosts the students, and what I did was I called the education department for medical education, and I found somebody who takes care of helping the medical students get settled, and I think it's called student services, something like that. So they have a private website that I list my rental on, and then the students get in touch with me directly and they discuss the terms of how long they need to stay, and I list my rent there. So it's worked out pretty good. I noticed the medical students are very responsible. They always pay on time, and they are hardly ever there. So it works out really good. So just wanted to give you a heads up on this. Most people, if they live in a medium or large city, have a hospital there. So if they just called around and figured out how to find this part of the hospital, then they can be hooked up with someone to help them find renters for their rooms. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Matt, we usually take questions, but this comment was totally worth taking.
Yeah, I liked it, man.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll take more awesome comments in the future on our episodes. But Noel, this was totally worth discussing. And so thanks for mentioning this. We really love this idea. And I think, Matt, like Noel, what she's really hit on here, what she's really made happen was she found her niche. And similar to kind of what we just discussed in Ryan's question on whether you should be investing in multifamily or single family homes, you have to kind of find what you're specifically good at. And yeah, you just need to find the space that you can own.
Yeah, it turns out you don't have to choose between single family and multifamily. You might be able to get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, for sure. And Noelle's crushing it. It seems like she's become the go-to place for medical students in her area to find housing. I love that. I love her approach to this.
Yeah, and Joel, obviously this really got me thinking, since we have an apartment in our house now. I reached out to a friend of ours who's in healthcare, and he actually recommended to check out the Area Health Education Center. It's called AHEC. I don't know if they call it that, but that's what I wanted to say when I saw the acronym.
We're doing all the good acronyms.
Exactly,
today.
Yeah. AHEC. the Area Health Education Center. This is a nationwide organization, but they have local chapters with their own programs and resources specific to different cities and regions. And so for the Atlanta chapter, I looked and they didn't actually have a specific resource for housing. I emailed them though, and I'm actually waiting to hear back. But this is a great consideration for folks out there if you're in a position similar to us, where we, you know, we were rocking the Airbnb for a little bit, realized that it got to be a lot of work. And now we've been renting the apartment out on a more traditional basis, but not necessarily for a year at a time. I think ideal for us is a couple of months. And it sounds like that might line up perfectly for someone who is in town for a rotation.
Yeah, for sure. I think, Noelle, what she brings to the table is that we should all be thinking outside the box a little more. Like, instead of just listing a property on Craigslist or Zillow, like everybody else is doing, maybe we should do something different. And almost nothing in life is one size fits all, right? Like, you have to find the best avenue for you. And Noelle has found a great avenue for her to make good income, have solid tenants in her place consistently. It's something she feels comfortable with, and she's got down pat. She's totally owned this space. And so, Matt, yeah, best luck with AHEC and getting some medical students in your place. It sounds like a great avenue to pursue. And you know what? You just might have this pipeline funneling great tenants to you consistently, which is super cool.
Yeah, it sounds like a pipeline of free healthcare coming your way as well.
Yeah.
Would you ask these students to like look at something on your back?
Can you take a look at that rash on my arm, please?
Exactly. We tend to cheap out in some areas of life. And sometimes that comes back to kind of bite us in the end. And hopefully healthcare isn't one of those areas.
Yeah, you might need to get a dentist in your basement apartment.
Don't tell people.
They already know. You've leaked the info.
All right, Joel, that's going to be it for our questions for this episode. Let's take it back to our beer. This episode, we've been drinking Hazelnut Mocha Latte. This is an Imperial Milk Stout by True Respite. Again, this was donated to the show by our friends Waffles on Wednesdays. And they were on this fantastic road trip, and they brought us this beer from Maryland. I was actually out of town when they swung by, but I know you got to meet up and hang out with them.
Yeah, got some coffee. It was great hanging out with our friends and seeing them, hearing about their travels, and they brought this beer, which was really kind of them, from a pit stop that they made in Maryland. And man, this was a great beer. Matt, have you ever had Rogue Hazelnut Brown?
Oh, yeah, but it's been maybe a decade.
Right, yeah.
It's been a long time.
Probably for me, too. Rogue was one of the first craft breweries in the game, and their Hazelnut Brown is kind of the OG of hazelnut beers, in my opinion. And this one kind of ramps up that multiple notches, and it's smooth and it's creamy. Overall, just massively delicious. I love a good coffee beer. I like it when it's a little creamy like this too. The hazelnut notes make it a touch sweet. So for folks that like their coffee with quite a bit of cream and sugar,
yeah,
they're
going to
dig this beer, right?
Yeah, well, specifically if you like a hazelnut mocha latte, you're probably going to really right. like this beer. And I'll say, I mean, you definitely taste some of the coffee notes when you drink the beer, but you smell way more of the coffee notes on the nose. It has a surprisingly massive coffee presence, but luckily it kind of mellows out a little bit as you drink it. But yeah, this was a good one. I'm glad we got to share this one, buddy.
For sure. All right, man, that's going to do it for this episode. For anybody out there listening who has a question they'd like to submit for a future Ask HTM episode, just go to howtomoney.com/ask. There are simple directions there for you to submit your question, and hopefully we'll feature it on an upcoming episode.
And if you haven't already, we would be incredibly grateful if you rated and reviewed us over at Apple Podcasts. It really does help so much when it comes to others finding our podcast. A 5-star review lets them know that this is a podcast worth listening to. So thanks in advance.
Well, man, I got to say, it's definitely my favorite podcast to listen to.
I also have a giant poster of myself in my own bedroom.
Which your wife loves, right?
Yeah, I definitely don't have one. All right, man, that's going to be it. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.